in a world of mindless movie cliches. One podcast fights back. Critics are calling it profound, epic, free. Prepare to revisit your video cassette memories of the 1980s and 90s. Behold, it's VHS Rewind.
Just in time for Halloween, it's Sherman Hemsley, star of The Jeffersons, and Amen in Ghost Fever.
What are you afraid of, ghosts?
I mean, no.
He's a big city cop, hot on the trail of some cool ghouls. But with ghosts around every corner,
there's a ghost out there in his afterlife.
All hell's breaking loose.
I've decided to give you a fighting chance.
It's a fright-filled, fantastic holiday treat. So join Sherman Hemsley in the supernatural comedy adventure that's exploding with laughs.
Comes on supernaturally.
Ghost Fever
sets the spirit free.
Charter is backing Ghost Fever with this terrific 26 by 40 inch poster. So laugh at the man over 24 million people love to watch every week.
Us dead people sure know how to live.
Order Ghost Fever today. Order Ghost Fever with the Charter value pack and save 12%. Street date October 7th.
Hello and welcome to VHS Rewind. I think it's clear we're reviewing probably the hottest song to come out of the mid-80s. I've on today Gino Cuddy. How are you doing, Gino?
Doing well, Mark. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. You brought to the table a very interesting film that, you know, I know of this movie. It's I actually have it on VHS here. I didn't realize I did, but I do. And it's a movie I remember very, very well as being when I worked in a video store. It was always on the shelf. It was not a very popular movie, but there was a lot of buzz around it because, of course, it had Sherman Hemsley in it. And Sherman Hemsley is just a beloved, to me anyway, comedy actor. Of course, in The Jeffersons, in Amen. You know, he's just hilarious. And of course, you know, going even further back to All in the Family. But so this is a movie he pretty much primarily financed, almost going bankrupt from producing. But this is a movie you brought up in conversation. So I'm gonna pass the torch over to you. I wanted you to talk a little bit about Ghost Fever, and maybe tonight we can get on a little Ghost Fever. And I like the song, actually. Ghost Fever.
Yeah, Ghost Fever was a film that Sherman Hemsley, you are right, he did finance a lot of this film. And as a matter of fact, again, you are correct in stating that he nearly became bankrupt as a result of it. I believe the budget of the film was $3 million, yeah. If I'm not
super
mistaken.
Low budget for the time, yeah.
Yeah, and he threw in everything he had with this, like his All in the Family, Jeffersons, and I think that he had just started the Amen program at the time, and he threw all those residuals in. To the program, into this film, excuse me. And unfortunately, it didn't do so well. Here's one of the main issues with it. The screenwriter for this, a fellow by the name of Oscar Brodny, yeah. He hadn't made a film, really, in well over a decade. I believe the last screenplay he had helmed was in 1971. And to give you a bit of a, this is a horror-themed supernatural comedy. To give you an idea of his level of humor, he was one of the primary writers behind the James Stewart film Harvey, as well as the Francis the Talking Mule series of films.
Yeah, I mean, he definitely had a slapstick humor behind him. He had a tremendous career throughout the 40s and 50s. Worked throughout those 20, for 20 solid years, he did a ton of television and film. And I think that's really what this film brings to the table, is a certain, maybe Sherman Hemsley had a real love of slapstick humor and really trying to do something. And I mean, in my opinion, and I'm sorry to say, I think the film does fall really flat. I didn't laugh. I didn't find it funny. I didn't find the physical humor to be very funny. The effects, I laughed more at the effects, and I hate that. I hate the fact that I just couldn't enjoy myself with this film, being that I really do love Sherman Hemsley so much. Loved. And I really wanted to like this movie. It reminded me that I did see it also years and years ago. I'm sorry to have to, say I did not love this movie. But, there are things that are positive about it as well. Like I said, I think the music is fun. I think if you want to see something that's really kind of crazy. I mean, if you're in the mood for something that's really way off the charts and really doesn't fall very easily into any category one way or the other, then I think this is a good movie for you. I think people should see it. It just did not resonate with me though, personally.
I could totally 100% see that. I mean, here's the thing with me. I am fully aware and I fully acknowledge the fact that Ghost Fever is a bad film. The narrative is disjointed. There are numerous issues with the script, jokes that fall flat. Yeah. But, God help me, I like this film. And I think part of it, mostly, is because it really cemented a friendship that I have with the guy. Me and this fellow up in Canada, we have Facebook movie nights, and one of those movies that we selected was Ghost Fever, because he had remembered renting it on video years ago. And
oddly enough, I do own the VHS, so if I really want to, I guess I could digitize my copy. And but nonetheless, I'm glad you were able to find this friend. And yeah, I mean, you find this kind of weird movie and you create this friendship, both enjoying something that's kind of off the beaten path. There are a lot of movies that I like that people don't like. Now, VHS Rewind, a lot of people do tend to think I automatically love bad movies. I despise bad movies. This is not even the worst of the movies, though. There's no way would I put this as some of the worst movies. But yeah, I mean, I'm not a big fan of bad movies for the sake of being bad. On the other hand, This is just a weird movie. It feels like I'm watching a Broadway show on acid. It's really, everything is everything's on a soundstage, and I feel like I'm watching a more modern film, a 1980s film, but from the 50s in a way. The way the cars, the car accident is, and the way the additional dialogue tracks are included, the way it's kind of spliced together in the editing, the special effects and everything. I mean, it is a very fun movie to watch. It's not for everyone. I guess that's what I'm going to keep on kind of saying. I'm glad I saw it, but I don't know if I would return to it. And I'm still surprised I own a copy of it.
Well, another thing that this film is kind of notorious for is for being one of the many films during this time period to have the Alan Smithy directorial credit. And for those of you who aren't in the know, yeah. Alan Smithy was a pseudonym for that the Directors Guild of America gave directors the permission to use if the director felt that the work got away from them. And Lee Madden, who directed Ghost Fever, went to the Directors Guild and said, hey, I'm not proud of this work. I think that this work is totally unrepresentative of, you know, my skills as a director.
Yeah.
And I'd like to have the Alan Smithy pseudonym. And so that's what happened. When you watch the film now, it says directed by Alan Smithy. There's another comedy that comes to mind when I think of Alan Smithy, and that's the Cheech Marin film, Shrimp on the Barbie. And, of course, there are other films that use the Alan Smithy.
So many, There's one about Alan Smithy, I believe, that they were creating as a campy telling of the story of the invention of Alan Smithy, and it became so terrible that they actually used Alan Smithy as the director, from what I understand. There's also a really, really wonderful documentary about who is Alan Smithy, or it's called Directed by Alan Smithy. It's only like 45 minutes, but from 2002, which I really, really recommend. It was directed by Leslie Kleinberg, but I saw that in the theater, actually, and it was a really, really worthwhile film. And yeah, I mean, I think that the whole Alan Smithy phenomenon is really interesting.
So do I. I mean, it's. I think that the name was retired in the early 2000s. I think the year 2000, as a matter of fact, that name was retired. Yeah. I think that the Directors Guild decided to do away with it. This is basically like, I mean, you know, Ghost Fever. You know, you see that title and immediately also brings to mind films like Ghostbusters and Ghostbusters. You know, really captured the nation by storm.
I was thinking Dance Fever by the logo, because the Dance Fever logo is somewhat similar, and I really didn't remember the movie when I first started watching it. And, yeah, I didn't know what to expect. And I have to be honest with you, even while I was watching it, I had to rewind it and go, hold on, I'm not really following it. Like, I kept on... There are just some very interesting scenes. I say we get into the actual story, which is, it jumps around. Like, the story is a really, really crazy story. But it opens up with in a cemetery, right?
Yeah. What the perfect way to start your comedy, dreary, almost near monochromatic, funeral scene.
Yeah. Very, very strange. And, do you want to talk about how the scene opens and kind of what happens there?
Well, the film opens up with the funeral of Andrew Lee. As soon as the pallbearers and the funeral attendants leave, that's when Jethro appears. Jethro is... played by Sherman Hemsley. Sherman Hemsley plays a dual role in this. He plays Jethro, the district supervisor of spooks, as he announces himself. And he also plays Buford Washington, as you heard the trailer at the top of the program, a big city cop, hot on the trail of the ghosts, too bad to get busted.
They don't come off as cops to me. The whole time I'm watching it, I'm like, are they salesmen? Like, just I didn't get cops from them, you know. And I think the trench coats, maybe, you know, they're very all of this reeks of 1950s campy police dramas. You know, I would have loved to see this movie done. I mean, you know. Of course, you can look back and make critical decisions like this, but it feels to me that he should have made a black and white 50s campy horror movie, and that's it. It would have probably been cheaper, and you know, it's, and I don't know what he was trying to do here. Like, in your opinion, what was Sherman Helmsley? What was he trying to bring to the table here? What's the demographic here?
Well, there was actually an interview that he did on the Tonight Show around this time with Johnny Carson, and they briefly discussed Ghost Fever, and He said that these are the types of films he wanted to make, you know, Abbott and Costello type, you know, family films. And I feel that the thing is, you know, after he had played, you know, that iconic character of George Jefferson, you know, not only in All in the Family, but for all 11 seasons of the Jeffersons, which, you know, you got to realize that was an astounding number at the time, you know, for a television program, especially a sitcom, to be on the air for that amount of time.
Right. He was one of America's sweethearts. I think in general, as TV viewers, we loved him.
Right. So I think that he wanted to sort of stretch his artistic legs here and, you know, play something a little different, play something a little bit more off the wall and unhinged. Right. I mean, here's the cool thing about Sherman Hemsley that a lot of people don't know that I found out during my research. He was actually a fan of prog rock.
Oh, yeah.
He was a big fan of Yes, and I think he was somewhat of I think he was a record producer. I think he managed like a girl group or something like that, but he was very big into like Yes. Like, that was one of his favorite bands.
It's not something I would expect, but, you know, it's to each their own, you know, and I think that's great that people are so multi-layered. But, you know, I'm going to jump into a clip here because your first clip here touches upon one of the stranger characters in this entire film. And that's the officer who sounds like he wakes up and has a cup of coffee with gravel in it or something.
Yeah. And ironically enough, he's the only actor from this whole movie that's still alive.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he's a guy by the name of Pepper Martin. He was a professional wrestler, and and he also, I think one of his more famous roles was in one of the Christopher Reeve Superman movies. I think he was actually in the one with.
Oh wait, was Richard he the guy Clark. Who beat him up in the truck stop?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh wow, yeah, you know, it's funny. I could totally see him right. He's on the screen. I'm like, that's who he looks like. He's the guy who beats up Clark Kent after he loses his powers in Superman 2.
Yeah.
Oh wow, that's kind of a very memorable moment. That's a Tom Willett moment because Tom Willett, of course, is such an identifiable person, and when you see him on screen, you're like, oh, Tom Willett, you know, and it's like, where do you know him? And you know Tom Willett from everything. If you look up Tom Willett, you'll see him in almost every movie you've ever seen. It's crazy. But here we go. This is here's our first scene. It's a setup in the police station. This is all taking place in October. It's actually October 20th.
I got a job for you two guys. You know the old Lee plantation just inside the county line?
Old Magnolia House. When I was a kid, we used to call it Spooksville. That place is haunted.
Haunted? You really don't believe that, Buford.
Don't knock it, Chief. When I was a kid, a gang of us went up there Halloween Eve to trick-or-treat. As soon as we knocked on the door, all hell broke loose.
That gag, Buford. That was someone pulling a gag on you people.
We didn't wait to find out. We all split immediately, and I haven't been there since.
You're going back tonight. You and Benny.
Not Benny, but Benny Smells. So so this is a real set. Like, you look at it, and you're like, this looks like a dragnet scene. And, right. You know, when I start thinking of it that way, I can forgive a lot of the issues that the movie has, because I do think that Sherman Hemsley had a vision. It just didn't translate exactly the way that I expected it to. But nonetheless, so yeah, they're going to go to this haunted house that he went to as his kid. We have a flashback, right? Now this is where I got confused. I'm like, who are these kids and why is it Halloween? And then I realized, oh, it was him. So that's where I had to rewind it.
The sequences of the flashbacks of Sherman Hemsley as a youth and all of that is cut out of the Charter and the subsequent North Star Home Video VHS and Laserdisc releases.
Interesting. I wonder why.
Well, probably for the reason that you're about to hear is the fact that, unfortunately, the ADR for these kids, the absolute worst you'd ever want to hear in your life.
Well, I was going to play, is that the clip two, the worst ADR ever?
Yeah, and I guess we should mention The fact that Benny Alvarez, who is Sherman Hemsley's sidekick in this, is none other than Luis Avalos. Luis Avalos had actually appeared with Sherman Hemsley in an episode of The Jeffersons, I believe a seventh season episode. And he's actually, in that episode, he plays a rough boxer that George winds up getting into a fight with and has to box at the end of the episode.
Funny. Yeah, which kind of connects to this movie.
Right.
But
I also know. And some viewers would know Mr. Avalos from The Electric Company, and some, like, really obscure TV fans may recognize Luis Avalos as the next-door neighbor of McLean Stevenson in the short-lived program Condo, which was one of the many television programs that McLean Stevenson tried to star in after he departed MASH.
That's very interesting. But here's a clip, the worst ADR ever, and I couldn't agree more. This is, it's more of a visual and audio thing, but I'm just going to play it because I think when somebody goes and watches it, if they were to do that, by the way, this whole movie is on YouTube. It's available. It's also the DVDs floating around. I don't think in this country, but I mean, you could find this pretty easily, this movie, but here we go.
Buford, are you turning chicken?
Yes, chicken. I'll show you.
Wow. Look at this place.
Did you hear something?
Maybe we shouldn't have come.
Wait.
It's the worst. It's really just like, what is this? And the kids are all like, they all look literally petrified to be there. It's so strange.
And I don't know if it was mentioned at the top of the program, and if it was, I apologize with my short term here. But this whole movie was filmed in Mexico.
Oh, was it? I didn't know that.
Yeah, it was all filmed in Mexico. And so as we roll along here. This is again a flashback scene. Buford, played by Sherman Hemsley, is reiterating the story to his friend and partner, Benny Alvarez, played again by Mr. Luis Avalos. And as they're driving, they see Sherman Hemsley sees what he thinks are two people walking, and those two people wind up being Sherman Hemsley in his other role, which is Jethro, the district supervisor of Spooks.
These guys kind of narrate the show. They kind of come in and out. They kind of pop in and they kind of give us a little bit of
exposition.
I wanted to see comic relief because I find their relationship is a little bit more humorous, I think, than what else is going on, in my opinion.
Well, the other actor, the actor who plays Andrew Lee, you know, who is the ghost who's brought back via Jethro's magic, he's played by a veteran character actor named Myron Healy. And he was known for playing a lot of villains in a lot of low-budget westerns in the 40s and 50s. As a matter of fact, he was in a few episodes of The Lone Ranger. And so this is one of his rare opportunities to play sort of a good guy. And this was one of his last films. His very last film, he played a doctor in the Rick Moranis, Ed O'Neill vehicle, Little Giants. But he was a veteran character actor, probably one of the more experienced actors on this whole cast.
And probably somebody that Sherman Hemsley grew up watching.
Right.
It's like a love letter to a lot of his heroes. You see trends like that in Little House on the Prairie, believe it or not, with Hitchcockian actors and different Western actors that kind of pop up from time to time. But so here's a little bit of the banter between them.
You can always stay on and keep scaring the hell out of the new owners.
That is the problem. There isn't going to be any new owner. They plan to tear the place down and make room for a freeway.
That's bad, Andy. There's no fun haunting freeways.
The driver's already scared.
So. I'm sorry. I know you didn't find this movie funny, but, you know, there were some moments, just even like going back today, you know, and the past week doing the rewatch to get ready for the program here.
Yeah.
There were a lot of scenes that I just found myself laughing at, you know, like that. I love that line.
Okay.
You know, there are some hidden gems to be found in this. I mean, again, I totally... that it's a bad film, but, you know, there are some little hidden gems woven in throughout.
Right. So, and that's another thing. This doesn't feel like a feature film to me. This feels like a TV movie. This feels like something that I really wish that he had made a deal with, like, NBC or whatever network he worked with and, you know, was given, like, given a special, you know? I think that a lot of this could have been done on a TV set. And I think that would have saved everyone a lot of money and given this kind of built in audience. And I just think that this, all of it lends itself better to variety television than it does the feature, you know, the big silver screen that's one of the problems I think I'm having with it, is this is more sitcom humor and less feature film, humor. And, you know, Sherman Helmsley, I don't think he's ever really translated very well to the silver screen. You know, he's really a TV star. But I think he's a good actor nonetheless. No matter what, you look at the guy and there's something about him that personally I just really, really enjoy. Something very classic.
I mean, the thing about Sherman Helmsley is he was the total antithesis of his character, George Jefferson. I mean, if you watch interviews with him, or if, you know, you just listen to interviews with people who worked with him, he was actually a very shy, private, candid person, not at all the bombastic loudmouth that George Jefferson was. And so I think that makes him even more great of an actor, and the fact that he was able to pull off a role, you know, when in fact, he was so introverted. You know, to me, not only does this feel like a TV movie, but it almost feels as if it's sort of like a backdoor pilot to a TV series, because it feels like a little bit throughout this film that they're trying to pitch this as a TV series. I don't know.
I see that. I see it a little bit. And maybe that's what it started out as, maybe a featurette of some sort. But here we are. We're in the haunted house, and this is going to be the torture scene. This is where they look like salesmen. They don't look like police officers at this point. Things just kind of they continue getting weird.
Diary of Beauregard Lee. This mechanism is to improve my slave's rhythm.
And here's another thing to just kind of mention. It's a lot of slave talk because this is a plantation, I believe. Was it a plantation?
Right. Magnolia House is a southern plantation in Atlanta, Georgia.
So there's a lot of slave talk, and there's a lot of and this is a torture chamber where they would do experiments on slaves. There are a lot of things that Sherman Helmsley pushed the limits to that would not be able to be done now. And I question whether it could be done then, you know, really. I don't know if a lot of this really lands very well. None of it ages well. So I'll just keep playing it. But we're putting it out there to present it in its current form. We're not here to state anything else but that this is a presentation of what is said and written.
The body is embraced by two huge arm-like grips around the torso and mouth, and then at this point the most insidious slamming sledgehammer type action comes whipping from the side past the abdomen, landing heavily on a block which is raised up between the legs of the slave.
And this is all happening in the background as he's reading this, which, you know, it's funny, you know. But it's also horrifying that he's reading this is the way they would torture slaves. And of course, this isn't real. It's just, I don't know. I don't know how funny that is.
Ooh, a slave may survive these blows by exercising extreme dexterity with his hips. The success of the mechanism is ensured by a spike which is introduced to the rear of the slave. That's nice. The spike gradually moves in so that the slave's swiveling action must be increased proportionately. Boy, that sure would give you rhythm. You know, Biff, I don't think this Beauregard was a regular guy. What are you doing in there?
So it's just, it's going on and on. And it's funny, you know, you can't watch this scene and at least go, what the hell's going on? But it's certainly entertaining. It's definitely, if there's one thing that this movie is not dull. There right. are a lot of things going on. I don't get it. I don't get it. I don't understand the movie. But so what do we learn? Let's kind of push forward a little bit in the plot, because essentially we learn that the entire house is going to be lost, right? They discover that there are other people haunting, or other ghosts haunting.
Yeah, there are two inhabitants of the home, and they are the form of two lovely Southern belles, played by, I believe, Deborah Benson and Diana Brooks, respectively, as Linda and Lisa. And I have to say, the girls in this film, they are the weak element of the whole proceedings. But regardless of that, Benny and Buford, they wind up meeting these two lovely ladies. And there's a very funny exchange between, I believe it's Linda and Louis Savalos. I found this funny, personally. I know that it's probably wrong to laugh at this, but I found it funny.
Is this the scotch?
Yes. Yes.
Yes. Two gentlemen would like a drink.
Yeah. I'm Lisa, and this is my sister, Linda. Scotch?
No, Puerto Rican. I'm Benny Alvarez.
It's not a bad joke at all. It's funny. Scotch. Yeah. But it's a decent joke. See, yeah. Stuff like that, you'll get a laugh out of me. But need a little bit more. If I'm paying, what would it be, like $7, $8 for the movies, gotta have more than that.
Right.
But you know what? Honestly, I would have been about 13 when this. No, I would have been 13 when it was shot. It was filmed, I believe, in 1985. Wouldn't really hit the theaters until 87, I believe, even though it's credited for 86.
And it was released by none other than Miramax to theaters.
I think by 87, I was pretty much a film. I don't know if I would sit through something like this, but I would at 13. I would definitely, mm-hmm. And I would probably like it a lot. You know, one thing I think that is a real shame is that Sherman Hemsley, who, when it really comes down to it, knows a lot of celebrities. He is a celebrity at this point, and he doesn't bring anybody in. There's no big celebrities here. There's no, I just don't understand why he didn't reach out to people that he knows in the industry to at least do some cameos. So that I'm not really sure. But on the other hand, the film, you know, was an Alan Smithy film. And a lot of people might have looked at that script and said, I'm sorry, I can't do this. I'm doing anything else.
Right. And you know, perhaps, you know, I mean, you know, people nowadays looking back on it would have been like, oh, why didn't he bring Isabel Sanford in? Why didn't he bring some of the Jeffersons people in? Well, I think at this stage in his career, even though he was quite popular as George Jefferson, I think he was trying to distance himself as much as he could from that character. And
really?
Like that.
I think he is that character. He is exactly, I mean, it's kind of like when in current movies where you have the guy who plays Iron Man, I forget his name.
Robert Downey Jr.
Plays Robert Downey Jr. You know, like it's kind of like, I don't care what role he's in. It's, and I don't know. I look at Sherman Hemsley here and I see him as the deacon from Amen. I see him from Jefferson's. I don't know. For me, there's no way for him to break out of this. And it doesn't look to me that he's even attempting to. He's even dressed in the exact same way that He's not dressed in the way that a police officer would be dressed. I believe he's a three-piece suit on. You know, it's, and like his partner actually has a like a handkerchief in, like, it's just, it's so weird to me. They look like salesmen. They really do. But, you know, it's a movie. It's a comedy. So they meet these women, and a lot of different things happen. I say we step it to, there's some special effects that happen on this, in the living room. I'm looking through. I like the billiard scene. That was kind of interesting. But do you want to explain what happens right before then, where there's some super special effects going on?
Yeah. As it turns out, the ghost of Beauregard Lee, the bigoted plantation owner, has also been unleashed. His mistress is back, Madame Saint-Esprit, as she calls itself. Probably one of the more eccentric characters in the film, and that's saying something. She wants to bring him back from the dead, and fully. And Sherman Hemsley and Louis Savalas, they want to leave, but Beauregard Lee, his ghost, doesn't want them to. He's trying to keep them in the house, and we find out why towards the end of the picture.
Yeah.
And he's launching like lightning storms, tornadoes, typhoons in the house to keep them from leaving. So
we get that famous shot of Sherman Hemsley kind of spinning around with a halo, with a like an aura effect around him.
Right. And he and Louis Savalos, Sherman Hemsley and Louis Savalos, wind up cowering underneath a piano. And Louis Savalos, he winds up getting out and trying to talk to the ghost, which is kind of funny. He's saying, hello, Mr. Ghost. I'm Puerto Rican, and I don't think you and I should have any issue. And then the lightning storm happens again.
Yeah.
Shortly thereafter, Sherman Hemsley and Louis Savalas try to escape from the house via bed sheets and what have you, but their attempts are unsuccessful, unfortunately, for them, and we are treated to what is possibly one of the, on the one hand, one of the weirdest and also one of the more uncomfortable scenes in the film, which is the dinner scene. Let's just let the clips, the two clips that I culled from this scene speak for themselves.
All right, here we go.
Benny, remind the two condemned men being served their last meal.
Chitlins? Grits? Watermelon?
I like grits.
Oh yeah, well then you eat them.
It is obvious Beauregard has his own ideas as to what you should be served.
Well, this is very good.
It's Lisa's favorite food.
Yeah, I just love them.
Oof. Ding dong, that wasn't me. It was him.
Who?
Him!
There's nobody there. Just a piece of chicken being eaten.
I told you there was a ghost.
God. It's so bizarre. They have a stop animation going on, eating the chicken. You know, so it's like,
right.
Somebody had fun one afternoon with that. They must have. It's so weird. it's a tough movie. So it's just not. I'm still kind of. I'm laughing at the things that are racist, flat out, you know, and, you know, it's just crazy to me that he would throw it all out there, but, you know, he has a really interesting sense of humor, and that's why I'm saying he's 100% George Jefferson. I don't see Sherman Hemsley at all doing much more than embracing a character like George Jefferson in this, but So, yeah. All right. So we move on. I kind of zone out here a bit, but yeah, they have their banter. There's a lot of banter going on between these women, and the women seem to really be taking out, well, they all seem to be taking out liking to each other, right? They're all kind of enjoying their company, and the ghosts are constantly just getting involved. We do end up in a hot tub, which is kind of an interesting, you know, thing where we end up. I'll play a moment of that.
So this is what heaven is like. I should have died a long time ago.
How do you feel?
Better than I ever felt when I was alive. I am dead, ain't I?
Oh, you certainly are not. You just had a little accident.
I remember going out a window.
So do you want to explain why he thinks that he is dead, perhaps?
Well, possibly because of the reason, because, again, Benny and Buford are trying to escape this house.
Yeah.
And Buford winds up getting knocked out by a potted plant.
Yeah, it's constant chaos, actually.
Right. And Benny actually does make it out of the house, but supernatural forces drag him back in, and he's knocked out by a windowsill. Mm. And he thinks that he's dead. We find him in the hot tub. And then, of course, a scene later, we find that Sherman Hemsley is in like the stereotypical, like,
he's in a Groucho Marx outfit. It's kind of.
Yeah, if you remember hilarious. The Sleepy's mattress stores,
yes.
He's pretty much wearing what the guy in that logo wears. And he's woken up and he's dancing,
he's a saxophone player.
Saxophone
is one of, this is going to offend a lot of people, but saxophone is one of these instruments that I really dislike. I don't know why. I think it has to do with a lot of 80s music that where it was overused. I think it's a wonderful instrument. I have really nothing against it. I just don't like it. It's like kind of like harmonica or something.
So, see, that's where we differ because yeah, I really like saxophone.
That's what I mean. It's to each their own. But he wakes up to this.
Where am I?
Nothing soothing about that, but I think that the saxophone is a very expressive instrument, as most wind instruments are. It's just the tonality of a saxophone is just not something I enjoy. So, but moving on to billiards, there's a billiard scene. A lot of weird stuff happens. I mean, there's a lot of superimposing throughout this movie, which is weird. This is a weird scene with a clock face on a face. They really, really use superimposing a lot in this, which is why it reminds me so much of a TV skit show. You know, it's there's so much variety type humor here that I just think if you were to throw a laugh track in, it would have done very, very well.
And for family film, I mean, again, the 80s had much different standards, obviously, back then. I mean,
but it's a family film with touches upon things that are very not family friendly.
Right. And for family film, it says a lot of, let's say, groin humor.
But it's not a family film. Like, if I were to bring a little kid to this, I'd be really pissed off about that. You know, I wouldn't. I don't think that this is a family film. I really genuinely don't. It's just a little. It's kind of like a family film in the same way that Airplane is a family film.
Yeah,
it's just not. It's not appropriate for little children. Well, I mean, they're definitely the racial undertones. There's a lot of themes here which I just don't think, like a 6 or 7 year old should really be exposed to. That's all. Yeah, maybe I'm just being sensitive. But
nowadays, you know, the thing is, nowadays, this is like really tame comparison to some of the stuff that they make for kids now.
I disagree. All the things that I'm talking about, none of this would even fly in any film, even rated R. You'd never have a watermelon racist joke in any movie.
No. Well, as far as that stuff, yeah. But
that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Describing how a slave is tortured while in the background it happening. None of this stuff is, it's not funny, really, to be honest with you. It's just what doesn't resonate with me. It really just doesn't. But yeah, I don't think that any of this would happen today. He also wouldn't have been able to probably pull off most of the stuff on television back then. He does curse a few times, light cursing. So, yeah, I don't see this as a family film. I don't, personally. That's why I don't know who this film is marketed towards. I'm not really sure.
Yeah. And there is a lot of, again, groin jokes, as I stated. There's a book called Groins of the Darker Species,
right,
that Sherman Hemsley reads in the film. And there's just like, and especially in this billiard scene, there's a lot of,
there's a lot of innuendos and there's a lot of things. And it's like, I don't want to just seem like I'm clutching my pearls. It's just, I can think of other movies that pull it off better. And that's my number one problem here. A Cheech and Chong movie is going to be able to deal with some of these type of things in a much more aggressive way, and granted rated R. It's just the matter of they actually follow through with the entire bit, instead of it being kind of hacky a little, I guess. I don't know. Again, Sherman Hemsley to me is an A-list star, right? It's just, he's better than this movie. That's one of the things that kind of doesn't work, I think, is his level of humor and this movie just kind of don't, they don't see eye to eye. But he's involved in it. It's his movie, so I don't get it. But here's the billiard scene.
Brad. Okay. Aha.
There's a lot of physical, visual stuff, but some of the scenes that they're in are pretty cool. This billiards set is actually pretty cool looking. So he goes to hit the cue ball, and the ghost stops it. This is very much, I think, in line with Abbott and Costello. And I like that kind of stuff where, you get the reaction of the person. And that's really, really, I think, working a little bit better here. But I'll play a little bit more of that.
You're right. He does cheat.
Now play fair, Granddaddy.
Thanks.
So yeah, I mean it's a visual gag. It's cute. After the billiard scene where he's dressed up like Sergeant Pepper, that's another thing that's kind of strange is their costume changes seem to be kind of random to me.
Yeah.
I don't understand what's going on there. And I bring up Sergeant Pepper. Have you ever seen the movie Sergeant Pepper's Lonely Hearts Band?
No, I have not.
Lonely Hearts Club Band. It's based on Sergeant Pepper, Beatles album, of course. It's a terrible movie. It's a weird movie in the sense where it's shot beautifully, clean wise. And it's a love letter to the Beatles, but it makes no sense. And Chris Hassler like loves this movie. I just can't watch it. But it's worth watching for the visuals. And that's kind of what these costumes are kind of reminding me of. Now in this scene after the billiards, we have a little bit of a lightsaber type of moment, another special effect where they're kind of fighting. I'll play a moment of that. It's just a lot of noise, but visually this looks kind of fun. I could see kids enjoying this part and not really understanding the other parts, but the lightsaber, you know, the trailer sells this movie so much better, I think, than how I enjoyed the movie. I think the movie just needed more gags. I mean, well, not more gags, more jokes, more. They needed to spend more time on the script. Because, I mean, the premise of the movie is crazy because we are close to 2/3 through it, right? Maybe like 60% through it.
Right.
And the plan is to save the house? Are we saving the house at this point yet? I don't even remember. I know that we keep going to the clock and changing it, and then Mr. Jefferson shows up and he's in a velvet tuxedo, and the two women are dressed like in these like ballroom gowns, and I don't know what's going on, Gino. I don't understand this movie at all. And even the other guy, the partner, has another Sergeant Pepper outfit on. He's covered in medals, like he's in some French military. It's like, what is going on here? And they're dancing, and then there's King Tut. It's a weird movie.
And probably the most famous, one of the more famous parts of this movie is, when they're Hemsley and Avalos are dancing, and then the ghost does the same. But Hemsley and Avalos, they're not buying it. So the ghost winds up revealing himself, and he wraps himself in, I think, a sheet, and becomes a mummy. And then we get to see that famous scene of the mummy breakdancing and doing a moonwalk. It's like, it's great.
Yeah, and even they're great. Like, what is going on? What does that sound like? I'm just going to play it to see what it is. Now, is this song done by a Helmsley?
No, because the next song is.
But you know, this will wake me up. This is like a fun, perfectly timed 1985 period song, right?
Yeah, and Hemsley actually performed this song on Soul Train, and there's actually a performance of him. There's actually a video on YouTube of him performing this song on I think a local Fox TV station. It's really fun.
I'm gonna play this song. It's kind of fun.
Jethro, wherever you are, get down here fast.
So, I mean, it's right up there with Disorderlies, right? It's
yeah, this next song coming up.
Here we go.
Emotions running through my bones. I've got the notion that we're not alone.
So I'm going to say that the whole movie is worth it just for that song.
And it's the song at the end.
It's not a bad song. Oh, yeah, he sings at the end, right?
Yeah, the theme song, which I love, which I would put on a mixtape proudly.
Well, you know, we'll definitely play it at the end here in full. So, yeah, they're dancing around. They're doing their coordinated dance. Yeah, we have the breakdancing mummy. It's crazy. What we start seeing is that the women start kind of, they're all dirty and their dresses are missing. And everybody is kind of, there's a lot of weirdness going on. I don't
know. Sherman Hemsley has boxer shorts with hearts on them, you know.
Yeah.
It's great. It's great.
Then have a seance going on, which is always fun, with King Tut for some reason.
Yeah, the Madame Saint-Esprit, she changes outfits all throughout this movie, too. And, you know, like at the dinner scene, you know, you're a Star Wars fan, and I've seen this as well. I could not help, but when we're at the dinner scene earlier on in the film, I could not help but look at Madame Saint-Esprit sitting at the head of the table and thinking she totally ripped that off from, what was her name, Diane Carroll from the Star Wars Holiday Special.
Oh, yeah, I kind of see that. Yeah, I just roll on to it. And, yeah, she has the whole room is just very, very interesting. You have a couple ferns in the background.
Hey, they're between chandelier. Two ferns, Mark.
Yeah, between two ferns. So, and then out of nowhere, a vampire shows up. I swear, this movie, it's certainly not boring. We have a vampire that is now, what is his involvement here?
The vampire, okay, so you want to talk about plot contrivances, well, here you go.
Well, it doesn't stop here either. It's right. Like, they need 60 grand and there's only one way to get it. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Go on, I'm sorry, go on.
So they have the seance, and the ghost of Beauregard Lee shows up in the form of a vampire because Beauregard Lee's slaves were descendants of a Haitian tribe that practiced voodoo. Yeah. And they put a curse on Beauregard Lee that he should always come back as a vampire, and apparently. And that's the thing that I love about this movie is all the classic, you know, with the exception of the Frankenstein monster and the Wolfman, all the classic monster tropes are checked. Like, you have your mummy, you have your vampire, you have your ghosts, you have your zombies.
You even have the aging ladies, you know, like which, you know what, for the time, it was not terrible.
Yeah.
Is, you know, them just kind of superimposing the aging face. It was, to me, it was very much like a 1940s type of. Effect.
And that's why, another reason why I love this movie.
I can see that. I can see that's why maybe you enjoy this movie a little bit, because it really is a throwback to like a Bela Lugosi era film.
Yeah, it totally reminds one of a slightly updated Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein type deal.
I wish when we went to go watch this, and like I said, I saw this in the late 80s, but I wish in the future, maybe if you tell somebody to watch it, say, watch it as though it was made in 1943. You know, make believe, or, you know, even turn down the color, you know. And make believe this is a black and white movie, or it's just a love letter to, you know, the Dracula era films, with a mixture of Abbott and Costello.
Right. And, you know, there were actually some other films like this that came out around this time, you know, right in the success of Ghostbusters. Like, there was a similar film actually that came out with Don Knotts and Tim Conway called The Private Eyes that would, you know, match perfectly on a double bill with this.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that he was, you know, maybe he was really kind of trying to give birth to the new low budget fun movie. And you know what? And I give credit for that, you know, but, so we get the vampire, and now the secret is out with these two beautiful women. They say that if we leave the house, we'll age, we'll actually deteriorate. And, get all old and crusty, and nobody wants an old and crusty woman. So we get this kind of weird thing, the still, it's going to play the
Don't
music.
Don't be frightened, but we knew you wouldn't believe us unless you saw it for yourselves. If we ever lost Magnolia House, it'd be the end of us.
Yuck. So,
and can I just say that, you know, we quickly just completely do away with Beauregard Lee. Like he is quickly taken care of.
Yeah.
You know, like not even within 5 minutes of him, you know, being introduced as a physical character in the film, not the ghost form, the physical vampire form, he is quickly taken care of.
Yeah.
You know, and then, you know, he gets defeated, stake through the heart type deal, which is more graphic in the uncut version. The VHS version that was released on Charter eliminated a lot of the gruesomeness of that scene. Then, you know, after he's defeated, it's found out that these two women are actually ghosts who can't leave their home or they'll deteriorate unless they take ectoplasm pills. You know, that really look like I'm trying to think of what these things look like to me. They look like little glass-like pebbles, you know, stuff mm-hmm. that you'd find in like a jar, like a therapist's office. Right.
It's like in True Blood, how they drink the synthetic blood. I don't know if you ever watched True Blood.
Right, right. And so Jethro, this is another one of the questionable moments that was a lot of this was cut from the VHS as well. But Jethro winds up pulling out a Magican African herb and giving Benny an idea. I don't know if you want to play that clip because it's funny.
Yeah,
you know,
sure, I'll play.
Again, yeah.
Hold on one sec. Here we go.
What is that?
A magic African herb. It stimulates the imagination, gives everyone ideas.
Gee, girls, this is really...
So, it's the weed, people. It's the devil's weed. So,
I love it.
Yeah, I mean, that's another thing. It doesn't fall into the family-friendly aspect of it, that's all.
And but, because of that, a lot of that is cut on the Charter VHS release.
Which, you know, it's so weird. It was the 80s, after all. They really probably could have gotten away with most of it. But they find that they're going to lose the house, right, if they don't come up with 60 grand.
Right.
So, apparently, they find that if you box Beauregard, is this true? Oh, no, if you box, what's his name, Frazier.
Smoking Joe Frazier, yes. He's in town and he's off. And
Joe Frazier, the biggest star in the whole movie next to Sherman Helmsley, right?
Yeah, and he's offering a considerable amount of cash if anybody stays in the ring with him.
$60,000. He's
Yeah, and this brings on another great song that I liked.
What song? Is that Don't Count Me Out?
Yeah.
All right, I'm going to play that.
Speak to me, okay, say something.
Is it over?
It hasn't started yet. The preliminaries are still over.
Don't you count me out. Now it's all of a sudden it's Rocky IV. it's almost like in the middle of the movie. Did Sherman Hemsley do drugs? This movie feels to me to be like a cocaine-fueled crazy bomb. It doesn't make sense.
You know, actually, Mark, you know, I just, you know, thought of this just now. I'm wondering, the title of the film, Ghost Fever, I wonder if that could be like a euphemism for something.
I don't know. I still think Dance Fever, but here we go.
Don't you count me out.
pretty funny thing. He goes to get into the ring, putting his legs through, and he does it so much that he actually steps back out of the ring. Always funny. It's a funny gag. But yeah, this looks and feels just like Rocky IV to me. You even have Sherman Helmsley dressed up like the coach. He's got he looks the part. It's so funny.
And of course, it's Benny Luis Avalos who gets in the ring. And again, you know, it's funny that there was a season 6 or season 7 episode of The Jeffersons where you almost had the same exact situation play out, where Luis Avalos played a boxer, but in the Jeffersons episode, he's actually more confident of his abilities, and he's kind of a bully in that episode, actually. So Hemsley must have remembered this episode of The Jeffersons and said, you know what, let's get Luis Avalos, and we got to, you know, just as a tribute to our one-time episode that we were in, we got to put in a little tribute to that one episode of The Jeffersons that we did together where we boxed. And so I guess he wrote, that they shoehorned in this sequence towards the end of the production schedule, which Smokin' Joe Frazier, in order to sort of pay tribute to that.
Right. Another weird fun fact is if you look at the flag, that they have an American flag hung up in the back, and it's a 48 star flag. It's not a 50. So it's kind of strange that they would have a 48 star flag, but here we go. Here's the rest of that song. Like, I'm just like expecting like a big guitar part to come out of nowhere. It's so bizarre.
I love the songs in this movie, though.
Yeah.
Like, I would pay big money for a Ghost Fever OST. Honestly, I love it.
So we go through the boxing match. He manages to get the money, right? But there is a funny scene, of course, where they're going in the middle of the ring. Joe Frazier's got at least, you know, 16 inches taller than the guy.
Right.
He's just towering over him. Somebody I would not want to have to fight. But he goes, again, it's like a boxing movie all of a sudden. It makes little to no sense. But he ends up getting, he doesn't win, does he? I'm flipping through here. I'm kind of forgetting.
Luis Avalos, yeah, he does win.
All right, he wins, but at the end, just what should I play next? Because there's not that much more. I'll play Benny winning. How about that?
Yep. To preface this, there was a line earlier where, you know, there's a sportscaster sitting just off of ringside, and he's like, "Ladies and gentlemen, this is unbelievable. I've never seen anything like this in all my years of being a sportscaster. There will be no film at 11.
Absolutely incredible. There's been a major upset here. Benny Alvarez has knocked out the champ. There will be film at 11.
No, there will be film at 11.
Yeah.
So everybody's so happy. Benny saved the day. But here's the thing. This is what I gotta get. So they save the house, but they can't be with the women, right? So they're like, all right, see you later, I guess. And the two ghosts have the bright idea of killing them.
Right.
So that they could spend their forever life.
Eternity with Linda and Lisa. Yeah.
And granted, they do appear to be happy, and we get that famous line that was actually in the trailer in here, but maybe you should have asked them, say, hey, what would you think about this lifestyle?
Hey, do you mind if we kill you?
Yeah, I kept thinking, because it rolls down the hill like 6 times, I'm like, it might hurt a lot, you know.
And not only does it roll down, not only, you know, not only does Jethro made the car tumble like six times, yeah. but the car also freaking blows up.
That's crazy. Know?
And it's like, yeah, this is like essentially a family film where you kill off your two main protagonists.
It's crazy.
I love it. I love this movie.
But do you have any other things? So what I was going to do is play it out.
No, go ahead. I love this theme song. I would totally put this on a mixtape. I love this song.
But any final thoughts? Because I'm going to actually, we're going to end the show right at the end of the song. So I'm not going to come. I am going to come back to talk to you, but I'm not going to be recording.
Okay.
but yeah, you can find out you can find Gino's career all over. I'll put links in the show notes. Gino, I want to thank you so much for bringing this movie. I know it might not have been my favorite movie of 2021, but like I said, it's certainly not a boring movie. I was very surprised to see that I own a copy of it on VHS. So if you do need a copy of it, let me know. And yeah, well, again, thank you so much for bringing it to the forefront. I did enjoy the music. I will give it that.
I mean, I love this movie. You know, I probably love this movie more than most people do. and it's primarily for, you know, the sentimental attachment, you know, sure. that I have with my friend.
And that's important. You know, it's important to have that type of connection. It's just sometimes it's a hard sell to, you know, other people. But yeah. I will say there's a couple of the songs I think are very fun. And I'm definitely going to look up the Soul Train thing with Sherman Hemsley.
Yeah. So, yeah, this is a fun movie. It's an off-the-wall movie. But don't go into this expecting anything on the level of Duck Soup. This is just mindless, pure fluff entertainment, you know, off-the-wall bonkers, you know, like 80s entertainment. I love this movie. I know Mark did it, and that's all right. Look, I fully acknowledge again that this is a bad movie, but I love this movie. I enjoy it.
If you like movies like Leonard Part 7 or 6, yeah, Leonard Part 6,
yeah,
you'll like this. You know, like you'll.
And I love Leonard Part 6.
Yeah, I mean, go in with an expectation of just a bonkers movie,
right?
and you won't be disappointed. But here we go. Here's the final quote. Here's Sherman Hemsley basically saying goodbye and the song. But, Gino, seriously, thank you so much. I really do appreciate you coming on here. And I'll put a link to your work in the show notes. But I'll see you next time here.
See you next time.
Sing a thing.
Us dead people sure know how to live.
Hey now.
Something strange is getting close, playing havoc, playing jokes. I thought I didn't believe in ghosts, but I got ghost fever. The investigation off the ground, everything is upside down. What's that eerie kind of sound? I got ghost fever.
Ghost fever
comes on supernaturally.
Ghost fever
sets the spirit free.
Ghost fever.
Now I've begun to see it's made a world of difference to me. Thunder rolls, lightning strikes, things go bump up in the night. I'm on tight, I'm turning white with ghost fever. Now thoughts are running all through my head. What else besides the phone is dead? I knew I should stay home in bed. But I got ghost fever.
Ghost fever
comes on supernaturally.
Ghost fever
sets the spirit free.
Ghost fever.
Now I've begun to see it's made a world of difference to me.
Supernaturally, ghost fever.
sets the spirit free.
Ghost fever.
Now I've begun to see it's made a world.